Hi, I'm Jen Suliafu, and I'm delighted to be on this journey with you. Life is an exciting game with many twists and turns. It gets really good when we begin to learn how it works and how to win. I believe that no matter where someone's life is at, we have the power to make radical shifts to create a life that truly honors us. I live for awakenings, so let's get to it, darlings. Hey guys, welcome back to the show. Today I am going to be interviewing in just a moment. Her name is Dr. Allison J.K., and she is a master mind, body, and energy healer. She's an author of several books. She's an India-trained yoga and meditation teacher, and she's just a fascinating person. She's been in the spiritual world as a healer for over 25 years. So I really enjoyed my time with her. But one of the things that I really loved about this interview is we talked about, she highlighted that we are going from this shift from the Piscean age into the Aquarian age. And I've been trying to wrap my head around what that even means. But in simple terms, I'll just say before we start here that, you know, so many things happen in our world that are happening in our world that a lot of people, I think, are misunderstanding and feeling like really hopeless and doom and gloom and like our world is going in the wrong direction. And I certainly don't feel that way. If you listen to this show, you know that I believe that we are going through a mass awakening. I've talked about it several times, but talking to Dr. Allison J.K. was really great because she highlights some of the things that speak to that. And it was just really great. So we'll go ahead and jump in here, but thanks for being here. Let's go. So welcome, Dr. Allison J.K.
Hey, Jen, I'm really happy to be here with you.
Awesome. So thank you for coming on here with me today. I know we've got a lot to talk about. I want to first just start with you telling people, kind of give us an idea of what you do and how you got into this work. I'm always fascinated with how you got into this whole realm of spiritual work.
Oh, boy. Okay. So the long story short is I've always felt this connection since I have been like a little girl, going out in the woods with my older brother and then later writing in a journal. And then in my late teens, early 20s, learning to meditate, taking yoga in my first year in college as an elective. And where I went to college, I didn't even know this until after I was there. There was like a Buddhist pagoda hidden out in the woods in the mountains. And so there was and in the first book written on mindfulness, actually, in the States, it comes from where I went to college. So my mom cued in about 15 years old when I was, Alice, she said to me, "You're really good with people. You have this like natural understanding of people. You may want to consider psychology." And my mom tended to be quite intuitive. And so I checked in with myself. That felt right. I did it third semester in. I was horrified because I was like, "You're not answering how do I be the happiest, most thriving version of myself at all. You're showing me like the hardwiring of the brain and how to apply it to industrial management and capitalistic purposes. And you're busy proving yourselves as a hard science." Back in those days, this is the late 80s, early 90s. So I left that major and ultimately graduated with a bachelor's in English Lit, moved out west to go for my master's in creative writing in English Lit. And synchronistically, while I was waiting tables, waiting to get into my grad school program, I got offered this gig to be a political consultant with a company, or pardon me, an organization rather, who very strategically, instead of just getting people elected to the state, this is in California now, in federal Congress, were instead looking to get people elected in the state and federal Congress and presidency who were going to write environmentally protective legislation. And because I hit my stride because I was so passionate about it, I moved up really, really quickly and got put into some really serious, crucial races in the state of California, and actually helped ultimately get a Latina woman, the first Latina woman elected to the California State Assembly, who actually wrote legislation to save the last bit of green space in LA Basin. But during this time, as I was getting put because of that success into an even more intensive race in the Sierra Nevadas between a developer and an environmentalist, I was stressed. So I'm walking through a bookstore in San Francisco, a book jumps off the shelf at me, basically, almost literally. And it was on meditation. So I started to meditate. And after the 92 election season, I took a break, went backpacking overseas. It was not my first time overseas. I had done some travel before as an exchange student to Venezuela. I actually had asked my Spanish teacher to start a program so I could learn the language instead of just a textbook. So now I'm backpacking overseas. I come back to the States and get my master's in public admin and environmental policy. I graduate, look for entry-level job with master's, asking the question, where am I going to help more? Where am I going to be able to affect more change? Is it in the system or outside the system? Applied to both. No doors opened, got that sense of, okay, got to reevaluate here. And so I did, and asked my guidance, my intuition, asked for support, like, hey, what are you trying to show me with these non-opening doors? And what I got was, Allison, if you want to affect the most change possible, because the market isn't ready to give, this is now the late 90s with the fossil fuel investment whatsoever at this point, work one consciousness at a time. So I went and relied on my bachelor's in English lit, went into the classroom, became a teacher and administrator, and did the side gig learning my first energy medicine modality at that as I was graduating with my master's, whilst teaching meditation to not only adults at a community center, but a male colleague of mine and I at the middle school I was at. The boys were starting to get diagnosed with ADD. And so we formed a club for stress reduction. And I had already learned Qigong at that point. Wasn't yet a certified teacher as I am now in Qigong. Took the boys outside and showed them like how to connect with a tree and a shrub and how it moved. I stood in front of it and did some certain stuff that I know to do. And it responded and they were in awe. And so I taught them how to do it. And they became aware of there's something bigger than just my thinking mind or my thoughts. And that really helped alleviate, I think, a chronic level of fear that they were living with that ran their minds into a real restless state, which is a state that's known in Buddhist terminology when working with the mind. So, okay, great. I then am fast forward 2.5 years and I'm having success with my client base on my side gig. And one Saturday I'm having my hands over a woman's abdominal area. And she's like in session number 4 of 10, package of 10 sessions. And we're both really pleased with the results we were getting. And so I looked up at the ceiling and I'm like, hey, how can I get even more robust results for my clients? This is great. About that same time, you can tell I've told the story a little bit before, but it's really important to go through it because it's not, it's a cool evolution of why I do what I do today. So then corresponding with that same event, it might have even been the same Saturday, I was looking at my checkbook in pre-digital banking days and was not happy and got the sense of, you know, where's the adventure? Where's the abundance that I know is a part of life? I don't want to be in this cage for the next 3 decades of my life. You've got to be kidding me. What else is possible here? Within a month, a colleague introduced me to the international school system. I did what I had to do, composed a resume, got plane tickets, flew to where I had to, all the different international schools around the world. Directors flew in, candidates like myself flew in to a hotel. I got interviewed from all over the world, schools in different hotel rooms throughout the weekend. Really interesting way to have job interviews. And got a bunch of offers and chose Taiwan because I understood from what I had been learning at that, by that stage, okay, so Asia, particularly India and the traditional Chinese culture, know and understand subtle energy and consciousness. It's the seat of where this wisdom comes from, but is still operating from as well today. It hasn't gone underground like it has in the West and to like the secret societies. So I go over there, I become an administrator as well. I teach AP psych ultimately, and the revisiting of the Western psych text reminded me of, or I got advanced knowledge now that I had been meditating and teaching meditation for decades and doing yoga. And so got certified as a yoga teacher in India during this time as well, and created a global psychology course as well that was half Western and half using the Dalai Lama's text from in every other year summits with neurologists and psychologists and progressive thinkers of the West, and I used the texts that were the results from those summits as the other half to this global psychology course I was teaching, and came back to the States after getting my PhD as a holistic life coach, and what started as my dissertation. I was led in my research to produce a book, my first book, What If There's Nothing Wrong? And in that, just really the experiences I was writing in traditional tea houses late at night, after going to the gym to work out after work, just really seeing how much we would thrive more in the West if we understood how consciousness and our subtle energy system works, and we valued it, because we take a lot of care with the maintenance of our cars and our homes and the cleaning of them. But ultimately, like, I was wicked psyched when I saw that I could move across the planet with 9 duffel bags, that the stuff I owned in this world was able to fit in 9 oversized duffel bags. Granted, in my parents' house, in the room I had stayed in during the summers, when I would come back in between school years, my books, my whole library was there. But there's a sense of, like, my home is my body, mind, and spirit. So learning how to optimize our system I'm different because I apply it nowadays and working with my clients, as you asked, in a way that's about, like, really affecting our daily life, our finances, our relationships, our body's health and well-being, our levels of peace, our physical existence. I have incorporated everything I have learned into answering that question: how do we be the happiest, most thriving versions of ourselves? I'm a personal trainer too, like, in our bodies, here in our everyday lives, not reaching to Sundays or one day a week for the connection with spirit, but infusing. This is very much from the Asian viewpoint now, in seeing how our daily lives, everything that we're doing, is infused with the sense of spirit all around us and in us, and how to connect with that to have more flourishing.
Wow. Wow. So you do. So you went and you studied for many, many years in Asia. I did read, this was really fascinating to me, that you went to Asia to study right before 9/11.
It's interesting you picked up on this and where you're from in Utah, right now where you're seated. Yeah, it was, I'm just tuning in to see, like, how best to take this direction, because I can feel some of the questions that you may have and your listeners may have. It was really interesting to be moved from my home country after 9/11. I had only been in my school for 2 months. I had gone early so I could have time to get grounded in the country before I started, you know, to bring in the aspect of my entire professional career. So I had been there a little bit longer than the other teachers that had just come in. And I remember seeing it on the television screens in the classrooms. And my dad had a branch of his company in the Twin Towers. And I remember how, like, just rushing downstairs and getting the Chinese administrators to help me make a long distance call, which we didn't usually do from there, to my home, to make sure that my dad was okay, that he hadn't been in the New York offices at that time. And apparently my dad's company moved everybody from the Twin Towers down to St. Pete temporarily while that all got worked out. I'm going to say something that may sound a little bit politically incorrect. I got shifted out of being politically correct from that decade in Asia and from all my world traveling, because there just is natural things you can observe as factual, and it's not about a matter of perspective infusing that. And I realized that by being disconnected from my home culture, where I understood the advertising and the underpinnings of the marketing, and I understood the conditioning, I was removed from that conditioning, and I didn't read fluently Chinese at all. I spoke it conversationally, a bit beyond conversationally. But it allowed me to really play with how our thoughts create our reality and really see how my, like, we got stared at as, I'm blonde haired and light eyed, blue usually. And so the locals would stare at my eyes as if I wasn't a human, but the eyes were an item to look at. It was a bizarre way of being looked at. And I would get stared at. And in fact, I eventually, because I immersed myself within the local culture and didn't stay up in the teacher provided housing that was part of our contract. Instead, I used a stipend to move downtown to be immersed with the local community because I was there for that experience. I remember teaching, I got asked to train the new incoming teachers in the orientations in the beginning of the school year, the foreign teachers. And I remember having to do a unit. I chose to do a unit on how to deal with the staring. So some days I would frame my perspective intentionally. Okay, today I'm going to view the staring as invasive and a problem. And I would see how my day went. Another day I'd look at this being stared at as, okay, I'm getting treated like a rock star here. And I look at how those days went. So the removal from my home country, I also wasn't a part of that, what I view as a bit of emotionally overreactive. There's an aspect of when we're tuned in to our inner voice and higher guidance, there's in the years, decades of meditating, I've gotten to be more neutral and able to observe rather than reactive. And the reactivity that perpetuated, I mean, granted, it was such a disaster and it was so many people were hurt and with such long-term problems for the firefighters that went into the building. Obviously, my heart and compassion and prayers go to everyone who was affected by that. But I feel like the state, the world, like there's been attacks in other countries, man, you know?
Wow. That would be, I can't even imagine how that would be to be on that outside looking in. Like, I mean, it was,
it was
profound for all of us, but for you to be in another country and be on the outside looking in, but you mentioned something so profound when it comes to that. I think that that's the biggest thing for me when people say, you know, why should I meditate? And you said you became the observer, right? Because when you meditate, it brings you to that space of not getting so emotionally involved in everything in life, right? It's a game changer because you start to become the observer and things just don't matter like they used to, in the sense of all of the little things bothering you so badly, right?
Yeah, and in I remember when I came back here, I had the worst culture shock, Jen, and listeners, coming back to my home country. It was bizarre. I was going to, like, you know, Cambodia, I was going to Bali, I was traveling all these different places. And my hardest culture shock, I mean, maybe the exoticness and the lure of adventure and travel wasn't there, but really immersing myself back after 10 years of being away from here, except for the summers, I'd come in, visit family, get supplements that I needed, and then threw them in my suitcases and went back. But I remember, like, a couple of years in, just how much it took to remind myself to live here. And this is an interesting story. I remember my first year, I became friends with a guy, a local Taiwanese guy who owned a pub downtown, because our first year there, like, I feel like we were acting like we were sailors. It was a big thing for expats to go out and play. And I remember one morning with a slight hangover on top of a roof, I was doing my Qigong, and I recognized, Allison, you know, this whole practice, your whole life is about cultivating light, and alcohol is a depressant. What are you doing? You're working against yourself here. So I stopped at that point, but chatting to him nonetheless, I had gone to a local Buddhist temple, and the temples there are a combination of Buddhism and Taoism. That's T-A-O. That's like the culture that created the yin yang. It's the traditional Chinese medicine's cultural and philosophical foundation. So they're combined both usually. And so I went to a temple, they had these little like gumball machines, but instead of getting gumballs, we got these little scrolls that opened up really, really long. And there were fortunes supposedly. Ooh. So I took this. Yeah, it was fun.
So much better than a gumball.
Yeah, it lasted a little bit longer because I'm still talking about it. So in response to what you just said, I remember saying to my friend who's quite Buddhist, who owned this pub and worked there, look at this, man. Can you tell me what this says, please? So he looks at this really long, really long scroll with loads of words on it in Chinese, all sorts of Chinese characters, on and on and on. And he goes, take the middle way. And I looked at him, I'm like, I'm sorry, that's it? And he goes, yeah. And I said, okay, so I understand that Buddha took so yoga, when I went to India and got more deeply formally trained in meditation and yoga, I learned that there's 8 limbs to the traditional path of yoga that was created 5,000 years ago. And one of them only is the body postures that we do in all the studios. 5 of the 8 limbs are about working with the mind and consciousness. Look at that. One in that RF is on the body postures. And that's what our emphasis tends to be in the majority of yoga studios in the West. 5 of the 8 are about working with the mind and consciousness. So Buddha pulled those elements up and out and then traveled north to Nepal, Tibet, and over east to China, mainland, and up to Japan in different sites and down to Southeast Asia. So we have the 3 different main schools of Buddhism. But I was standing there talking to my friend in the pub in Taiwan after he had said, take the middle path. And I said, you know, I don't want to lose my passion. I love my fire. I love how passionate I can get. I don't want to lose that. So I'm afraid of meditating longer, any longer going along this path any deeper. And he said, Allison, you're going to not only come to a middle path with the fear and the reactivity and the anxiousness and the worrying thoughts, you are going to come to a middle path too with dialing down where the fire is maybe can get too high. And I'll never forget that, because when I then really began an even more in-depth study of what's contained within our subtle energy system and the different parts of our body, I realized, and even like the Ayurvedic, which is the medicine of the folks over there in India, their traditional medicine, realizing the different doshas that I ended up teaching classes on here in local yoga studios. It's a metabolic personality typing. And so then you can get prescriptions, so to speak, of how to eat best for your dosha. And we get a primary and a secondary one. And the one that I am is the same in both primary and secondary, and it's fire. So I began to realize, like, too much fire, you know, you end up with inflammation kind of. I don't have inflammation, but I understood what he meant. So yeah, it's, there's so much more than what we're shown and growing up in the States that's available. And I'll never forget, based on something you and I chatted about briefly before we started, I was training, so I'm like probably my first year back, maybe second year back, and I was training some local folks in Usui Reiki, which was the first of the 5 energy medicine modalities I learned before creating vibrational upgrade system, which is half my background in yoga and meditation, and then half in energy medicine. And so this woman said to me, Allison, I'm a real devout Christian. Is this going against what Jesus did and said and is about in my church? And again, this is another example of like how I had to remind myself of what it's like here in the States. It was still me having some culture shock, but I had studied what's known as, in part of me, many of you may already know this, the Jesus's lost years from age 18 to 30. It's not written about in the Bible. And I've done some research on it. And in a Tibetan monastery, for example, there was a painting that was found in an attic by some monks, and some Westerners saw it, and it looks just like the portrayals of Jesus in the West. That's not the only monastery in the Himalayas that has that. There's another one, I think, in Nepal. And I know visiting, I take my students getting and practitioners up leveling in vibrational upgrade system. They meet me in Glastonbury, England, in the UK. And, you know, being having the English lit background, William Blake wrote a poem called The New Jerusalem, because Joseph of Arimathea, Jesus's uncle, was very wealthy from trading, and he traveled the Silk Route. He brought stuff from like the East on the Silk Route over to England, which was trading copper and tin at the time. You can still see the mines there. And so I just, in this last retreat, when I take my students to sacred sites, we just went to what's known as Jesus's Well in Cornwall, where they landed, and archaeological excavations have found Mediterranean pots and vessels in this area, showing there was trade that goes way far back into BC times. So Joseph of Arimathea, Jesus's uncle, would go inland to Glastonbury. There's what's known as the first church in the West dedicated to Christianity on an ancient Celtic site in Glastonbury, where the Glastonbury Abbey was later built. And it's Joseph of Arimathea dedicating a chapel to Mother Mary. Jesus was also have thought to have gone with his uncle on some of these travels. Jesus came back and was able to heal the way that he healed. I believe he learned Reiki when he was traveling in India. Hands-on healing as part of the miraculous healing. So long story short, but a fun bunch of information there, was I told my student, this is exactly what he did. As you run the light through your system, you're going to end up with having more capacity to forgive. This light contains divine intelligence in it. It knows where to go. It knows what to prioritize. And you get cleared more and more as you channel it in sessions. And so this is the healing that possibly Jesus had in the capacity in his hands to heal.
Wow. So interesting. Oh my goodness.
Isn't that mind-blowing a little bit?
That is mind-blowing. And I love to hear, it is mind-blowing, but I love that you brought up healing, because we talk about, so from where I'm at, we have a very, I live in a very religious area of the country. And there is it, I often talk about the power of love healing, right? Because honestly, there's people that say, oh, just these certain people can do healing. Right. Or these people that are in this religion and hold this certain place in the church can heal. And I say, I don't think so. In fact, I know so, because you can literally put your hands on someone and heal them with love and light. And yes, that's just fascinating. But I feel like Jesus was the perfect example to us to show us about healing. And so many people think it's just certain people that can heal, right? And when we come down to it, we realize we're all healers.
Oh, that's beautiful. Makes me exhale. So what I want to say to that I feel like would serve you and your listeners the most, Jen, is that, okay, now I'm going to go even into a more of a direction. In 2011, I was approached by Voice America, asked to do a radio show weekly on their channel about the Mayan galactic alignment of December 21st, 2012. And I wasn't doing anything public facing in my business around the Mayans. Now I live on the west coast of Florida nowadays. And so it's a hop, skip and a jump across the Gulf of Mexico down to the Yucatan, right? Where a lot of the cool Mayan ruins are, like an hour flight. So I had been taking clients on VIP trips there, but it wasn't public facing. It was only word of mouth. Nonetheless, I said to the person on the phone, okay, give me 48 hours. Let me feel this out and think about it. I'll get back to you. So I said yes, ultimately, because it was just such strong intuitive guidance. And weekly, I interviewed experts about, okay, what does this mean? So it wasn't only the Mayans that said 2012 is the end of a 26,000 year cycle and a new cycle begins, debunking all the noise around like it's the end of the world, apocalyptic kind of BS, frankly. In the yogic world, Yogi Bhajan talked about it's the end of the Kali Yuga, and Yuga means era, in the beginning of a new era. In professional astrology now, a third example, other than the Mayans, astrologers understand that we've left the age of Pisces and are now in the age of Aquarius. I say this because what I came to learn, to the point that I was asked to be one of the experts on this cruise to Chichen Itza, one of the main ruins in the Yucatan, where I believe the calendar was created, that predicted this from the observatory there. It's really cool to go see. I was one of the experts. I was teaching meditation and yoga and doing energy medicine sessions on a cruise with some of the people I actually interviewed on my show. And it was phenomenal. We were there on December 21st. I had just been there the year before, had bare feet both times, taken my shoes off to feel the ground and get the energy from it. And there was nothing the year before, but on December 21st, 2012, it's like my feet were getting lightning bolts sent up through the bottom of them. And we were all asked to dress in white. We got special permission to have a Mayan shaman conduct a ceremony with us. TV crews were there from around the world. I was told somebody in Poland saw me on TV because I had a colleague over in Poland. So it was a big deal. And what I understand about that time from all of this interviewing and asking of questions and writing two books about it, come to think of it, was that the old era, 2012 to 2032, is what is considered humanity's greatest evolutionary leap. And another way to describe it is humanity's spiritual awakening times. And in my understanding and all the work I've done with standing under the stars and meditating and praying and asking for guidance to understand so I can help be a better leader and serve where people most need it, is that everything has been clearing because we're coming into a new era that's going to be much more harmonious, much more about unity, not the polarity and divisiveness we've seen, where truths are coming to the surface. So you can see that in Black Lives Matter and the Me Too movement, and then all the ensuing equality that we're starting to see, even the gender gig with going into the they pronoun. There's this abuse of power that is being brought to the surface so that the people we can all kind of equalize in a way. And one of the aspects of this time is to no longer be, as we enter the second half of it now in 2022, this is now the end more of the cleansing and purging we've seen in the last 10 years. And it's more the construction, the building time towards the new golden era, as it's referred to. One of the main aspects is coming out of where we have felt victim to anything or anyone outside of us, whether that's an authority figure or it's a spouse or it's our own storylines in us that limit us with beliefs that say we're not enough, we're not good enough, we don't deserve, we're unworthy, where we're a victim to anything, so that we recognize our power inherent within each of us. And part of that is learning how to make more mindful choices that will create the new, rather than going on the habituation the mind is set up to operate within. So I say all of that because the authority aspect of, I swallow before I say this, of some of the people who have conducted religious houses in the past has involved abuse. And it has also involved, I have to be the intermediary for you. And in my understanding from the East and from the yogic practice, again, for 5,000 years of meditation, is we each at the above our heads have a certain center that connects with our higher version of ourselves, the more divine version of ourselves, or we'll hear that divine guidance that we all, you know, that stuff that we hear inside of our heads that we know is true. It's like that feather, soft whisper, as opposed to like the pounding of worries or fears or doubts that what is known in meditation is the ego mind, because it's the part of our mind that's attached to our ego level, personality level self that's been conditioned and cultivated in this lifetime. But beyond that and higher than that is the higher self. And then even above that is a center that connects with the divine. I can teach anybody how to have more healing and light flow through their system, and then how to direct it. It's a capacity each of us have. Now, I started this whole time together with you, Jen, and listeners, talking about how I grew up in running around outside in nature and connecting with everything. I didn't go into much detail there. And then writing in a journal, learning later in meditation that I had actually been learning how to cultivate a connection with my higher self. So I have always had this natural ability and lightness to me that I have intentionally learned how to cultivate and make stronger. And that's what I teach others to do. So I think that there is honestly an innate capacity that some of us have that's stronger than others. And I will say because of other lifetimes we've lived. Now, whether you believe in reincarnation or not, there's like many lives, many masters. For example, is a book you could read by Brian Weiss. I know one of the things that really I was incredulous at, frankly, was in Asia, learning how little they separate between lifetimes, between incarnations. And one of the understandings is that our faces look the same from lifetime to lifetime, whether we change genders or not. Yeah, it was really surprising to me. Like the symmetry of the face, like even having a beauty mark. And if a child is born and there's like a talent that emerges really early on, that's just, it's a carryover. So, I mean, there's scientific research you can do that doctors have done. I just gave you one book. I'm not going to go into that example now to try and talk to you about reincarnation, but I feel like in learning about myself and in having very neutral, logical, observing, having a very observing mind that's very, very logical. And I have a PhD, right? So I tend to explain the intellectual aspects of how this all works to people. And it helps a lot of people have a bridge into accepting the more mysterious in life. Where am I going with that? It seems like the lifetimes, I must have done this work before. I feel very predisposed to serving humanity. I have a very inherent natural understanding and ability to view what's going on out in the collective and on planet Earth. I tend to be about 10 years ahead of any major shifts. I've been, for example, a vegetarian since 93. Anytime I could go on with the list. I feel like there's innate capacities that some of us have more than others, but everybody can learn to cultivate them.
So when you say, okay, so much there, so much.
Have fun.
First of all, that book, I have to say, I have read it and it changed my life. His work changed my life. I have that book on the shelf right behind me. It reminded me of so much that I hadn't remembered in this life. That's for sure. It rang so much truth to me. But when I going back to you know, when we talked about you observing 9/11 and then talking about meditation, I don't mean that it wasn't a huge like painful thing for our world, but what I meant, and I know you meant in the sense of like us getting in that space of observing is you, when you realize, which I wasn't where you were at in 20, in what year was that? 2001?
Yeah.
Okay. I was far from understanding, who I really am, really. I was very, very asleep at that time in my life. And it was really painful. But now, like, going through 2020, okay, that was also very painful for a lot of people. I looked at it from a very different perspective,
yeah,
observing 2020 and understanding that really 9/11, 2020, all of these big events, all of these events in life, they are there to help us wake up, to come home to the truth of who we really are. And with you talking about, many masters, many lives, that was part of, you know, when you go into the world of two things, many things actually helped me wake up, but reincarnation and going into that whole world, it helps you understand and look at things from such a different perspective. Yeah. That is so profound. So I thank you for mentioning that book for people, because wow, it's amazing when you start to understand that we are so much more than just this one lifetime, and that, you know, growing up in religion, you're taught that you have one life and you better get it right.
Can I just interrupt for a second, please?
Yeah.
Reincarnation used to be in the Bible. The committee that met in Nicaea in the 400s AD took it out. Have more power in the church. I'm sorry. It's
but have you, more you power in the church. There you go.
It's factual. You can do more than just Google it.
Well, and that's the thing. That's the thing. You nail it when you say that. And I know some people are going to get upset about this, and that's okay, because we're really, I mean, at the end of the day, if you think you have one shot and you better get it right, then you're going to live your life in fear, right? You're going to be, I mean, that's scary.
You're going to need somebody outside of you to help you manage this one precious life, right?
Yeah,
it's scary. You know, I'm not saying that we don't need help, but I ended up tracing this, Jen. It's fascinating to me. When I was writing, What If There's Nothing Wrong, my first book, I was guided to these places to look at basically what happened in the West as a part of the book. This is not the focus, but I ended up going into what happened in the West that caused us to lose this ancient wisdom. Mm-hmm. Why did it go underground? And it's what we're talking about now, when science and church took over. Mm-hmm.
I have a couple of questions for you, though, because I know we're running out of time. I have so many questions for you, but I want to know, what do you see? Where do you see us at in 2032? So you mentioned 2012 to 2032, and I remember 2012 being a massive turning point in my own life. That was a major awakening for me. We're now smack dab in between that 20, you mentioned like the two decades, right? We're in the middle of that right now. So what do you think our world's going to look like in 2032?
Well, I go into it in a lot of depth in my third book called Reasonable Dragons. And that's also the only book of mine four that is available on Audible. So for a more in-depth answer to that, because it is an in-depth answer, I'm not trying to sell my books, you guys. You can go there for a short.
That brief. Sounds fascinating. I'll be getting that.
For a short, brief answer, it's like a new golden era. And so like the ideals that you see more and more of us talking about, like harmony and unity and equality and being led by the higher self and less greed and less ego manipulation and less fear, more community, more protection over the earth, more of the things that a heart that's yearning for humanity's well-being asks for. So we're moving out of a time. When I was in 2019, I went with a client on a VIP trip down to Teotihuacan. It's the ruins, the Aztecian and Mayan ruins outside of Mexico City. And I hired a local guide. And he said, when I asked him, what do you think the last era was about and this new era is going to be about? He said, destruction was the old, and we're in a new era of construction. So that con prefix means with.
Mm. Wow.
And construction means building.
Yeah.
So I see it as a time of co-creation where we're really recognizing our creative capacities, each of us inherently, with every choice we do make and that we don't make, or the choices we check out of making, or the choices we habitually make, is creating our reality. And as each of us then look together collectively, what we are living is based on all the choices we're making collectively. And so part of this spiritual awakening time I've come to understand is, you know how you're now able to sense when somebody's texting you and then boom, you get a text like within 5 minutes from them?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
You don't necessarily know they're texting you, but you all of a sudden are thinking about them.
Yep.
Yep. So that's and then here's other examples, skin sensitivities, ear ringing, tinnitus, concern about bacteria, all of the on the countertops, rather. So the growth of antibacterial soaps, all of these are signs of us opening up or getting more sensitive to, because we are awakening. And so the skin's awakening because the skin is our biggest sensory organ, right? So all of these are symptoms, as well as the increase of meditation apps and the increase of yoga studios and the increase of crystal bowl healings that are happening online and at studios before COVID even. All of these are symptoms of the humanity spiritual awakening time. So in a bottom line, we're going to be living more from the spirit and all that that means.
So how was 2020 for you then? Like, how was it? How'd you do over there is what I'm curious about. Because I know how it was for me. And how was it?
I had a lot of people ask me who were long-term followers to pontificate about what was happening. Now, I have a client over in the Philippines, and she had a friend in Hong Kong who got COVID. And then I had a client in Germany who got COVID. And so I traced it. I could give more examples. I'm just trying to give the main ones. I traced it coming across to the West and into the United States. And they wanted me to talk about COVID. And I basically have said over and over again, you guys, this is an example of the cleansing I have been talking about that's been going on since 2011, and it's been going on since 2012. And what I understand that makes me say, I don't really say it as much anymore, but I was saying it starting around 2016, if you are addicted to the struggle paradigm, I'm not the right mentor for you. Because if we're not attuned inside to a higher voice guiding us that is of truth, then we are living from a space that seems to require crisis or multiple crises in order to break through that ego mind or that personality level self. And from 2010 onward, I have been seeing clients come in to work with me who have multiple crises happening: divorce, loss, job loss, death of loved one, for an example, healing needed for a diagnosis. So it seems to me that if we are not proactively going about the understanding that reincarnation helps give the view of, like you were talking about earlier, and understanding that we are here as a soul in a body with a path to evolve beyond previous set points in previous lifetimes, which is called our dharma in Sanskrit. As we are here to evolve as a soul in a human body, if we are not seeking to do that proactively, and we get caught up in the maya, a Sanskrit word for illusion, of material reality, and forget about ourselves, that true eternal self, then that ego level of personality has to get broken through, and crisis is the way to do it. And it hurt me, Jen. And listeners, I don't cry easily. I mean, I release in pretty healthy ways, so I don't have built up tears that need to be cried. But I was, my first public event, once it hit the States for COVID, I was crying because my heart was hurting for humanity needing this level of suffering to snap out of it. And one of the things that's the hardest, that was really hard for me to admit, with one of my girls, she's a vibrational upgrade practitioner. trained at the Grand Dragon Master level. So she's had my highest level of training. She's one of the ones who takes calls from people who want to come in and work with me. And there was a time where it was so hard to admit it. I just didn't want to say it out loud, but both of us were talking about people coming onto the calls who were needing help and wanting help. And some of them just like weren't willing to take action for themselves to grow. They needed to wait more. They needed to wait longer. They needed to wait until something got worse. So the suffering became suffering. To get someone to take action proactively when there's nothing, there's no problem, which is how our society is marketed to and advertised to. If the problem isn't a problem, if it's not bad enough, then why take action? It's the same with the global warming right now. So it was really hard for me to admit, my God, people are lazy.
Yeah,
because it's not sweet. It's not loving. But it is what it is. It's a neutral observation. It just hurts my heart because that means more suffering and more crisis is going to be required in order for the wake up that's meant to be happening now to happen in humanity's spiritual awakening times.
Mm-hmm. Don't you see that so many people you've got people that are, they get it. They're there. They understand that this is about humanity awakening to a higher level. And then you see people that are trying so hard to hang on to the past. They want to keep things the way they used to be. And so many times I've been like, what do you want to go back to really? Like, when people are like, oh, our world is getting so much worse, so much worse, so much worse. And I'm like, really? Cause you tell me when, like, tell me when it was great. Like, really? Because when you mention, you know, all of these systems are breaking down, you mention like, even like sexuality and gender and all of those things coming to the surface and people getting to that space where they go, you know what? Let's just love and accept people for whoever they want to be. Right. Mm-hmm. But people are, there is a big part of humanity who are wanting to hang on to the past. And I think that the spiritual warriors came here to break things, to shake things up and get us to break out of our rigid boxes and look at things from a different standpoint, a different viewpoint. And a big part of that is, like you said, all of the we're going through, I kind of look at it like an earthquake, right? Where it's like all of these rigid systems are being shaken of like, why does it have to be that way? Why does it have to be, you know, these rigid ways that we've been taught in the past? And it doesn't have to be that way. And really at the end of the day, I think people are going to get so tired that they go, oh, screw it. Like, forget it. Just be whoever you want to be and just enjoy your life.
Well, there's just one brief thing I can say, because I do have to jump off. I have a program I have to facilitate of my masterminders who all get it, right? And they're stepping up as leaders in their own communities to make a difference and just emanate their light and support the shift. There are, I mean, I could go into so much detail here. The nature of the ego mind is wired into us to keep us safe and protected. That's the adrenals, the adrenal cortex, you know, do I go into fight or flight with this unknown threat? So the nature of the ego mind is to go into fear and protection mode when faced with the new. An aspect in natural healing is the body. Like if we look at the fever, a fever needs to peak before it breaks. So when you look at the people who are so resistant to change, that's what we're seeing. When you look at the polarity within our federal house and Senate and politics in general, the two parties, that's what we're seeing, the polarity before it collapses into unity. So let's just, you know, readjust our perspective. Maybe we at the Dragon Master level, which is the third level of working with me, we go into work for the collective. I teach them how to do different processes to help the collective shift, to help the collective and pray for the collective and send energy, how to work on behalf of the collective, which I do daily in a host of practices. So Yeah, it's a lot right now, and it's not at the same time, because not only are these the most intense times, but my God, are these the most auspicious times? There are new possibilities that have heretofore not ever been possible for us to be able to do and achieve and be on planet Earth. Like, I'm literally living on the cutting edge of possibilities, invoking, okay, what else is possible in those, the way that I know how to work with energy and consciousness and reach out to the greater field and see what else is possible. And I teach my mastermind is how to do that. The people working with me at the most advanced level, so that we can bring in the new possibilities and have them be as robustly positive as possible. So just continuing to reorient our focus. Like, I have, for example, this is a good redirect. So when your mind is like going down the, oh my God, it's so bad, redirect with something possibly physical, and then maybe ask, hey, what if there's nothing wrong here? Just even start with that.
That's so awesome. Thank you for highlighting that it is a very exciting time to be alive. It really is. So thank you so much for your time. I appreciate you. I'm going to put all of your information in the show notes below, so people check her out and check out her website, her books. And thank you. Thank you for being here. This has been a fascinating conversation, and I appreciate your time.
Likewise, Jen. I've really enjoyed being with you, hence get going over time and allowing it, because yeah, you're doing good work here. Thanks for what you're doing.
Okay. Take care. Thanks. Thank you, everyone. Thanks for joining us, and bye for now. Have a fabulous week.
Namaste.
Do you have a coach? I would love to take this journey with you to dive deep and start to shift those areas to create a life that truly honors you. I'll meet you on that bridge at whatever level you are ready, with either group or one-on-one coaching. You can check out my programs at jensuliafu.com/programs. Also, go ahead and hit that subscribe button and rate and review this show and give me your feedback. Also, please share this with your friends and family and be a lighthouse out in the world. Thanks for joining me.